We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast on the Blue Wire Network. I am Ty Windisch. As I'm sure you can tell, listener, this is not Kane Pittman. I am not Australian. Kane is unavailable this evening, but the show must go on. The NBA Draft 2019 is coming soon, and we wanted to get a bit of an idea of who might be available to the Milwaukee Bucks with the 30th overall pick. I'm not a draft expert. Luckily, my guest on this episode, Trevor Magnotti, certainly is. He is a writer at Fear the Sword and at The Step Back, also the host of the Thick Jacked Frames podcast. Almost got through it perfectly there. Trevor's come to help enlighten us on some prospects. Trevor, how's it going?
Going good. I'm hoping that I can maintain your podcast requisite number of Matthew Dellavedova fans tonight. And if I can reach that goal, I think we're going to have a good episode.
The Deli Talk is always encouraged. You know, we have a special fondness for Australian former Bucks on the podcast. Unfortunately, we've now lost all of our Aussies, but hopefully we'll get some back soon. Maybe not Deli, though. But speaking of players, not my best segue of all time, I want to get an idea from you as to some first reasonable targets the Bucks could get. I mean, the unfortunate thing about being good, and I know this is quite the first world problem in the NBA, is all of the guys people are salivating over at the top of the draft. I mean, Zion, of course, you know, some of the others, Darius Garland, Ja Morant, the wings, Culver and Hunter, those guys are all not even a chance, obviously, not even close. You know, who are some of the players, I think, first off, who could potentially slide to 30, who are probably better than that? You know, some of the guys who people may know a little bit about, maybe some of the better prospects that you could see potentially sliding down draft boards.
Yeah, I think one of the major selling points for Bucks fans to get excited about the draft is this is by far the weirdest draft class that I've covered since I started doing this. So this will be my fifth year covering the draft in any sort of detail. So kind of going back to 2014, the way that players are being valued in this draft class is very weird. And I think that there is a real disconnect between the teams and the draft evaluators in the media that are really kind of having a difficult time squaring different types of prospects against each other. And what that means is there's a very high likelihood of players that a lot of us in the draft community on Twitter think are going to be very, very solid players in the NBA falling potentially into the end of the first round. For a good example there, Grant Williams of Tennessee is a player who is in the top 10 on most draft boards that you will see in terms of just big board in a vacuum among kind of the draft Twitter community, and he's in mock drafts getting mocked around the early second round. So he definitely is going to be potentially available for the Bucks at 30, and that would be a steal. He's the guy that I have ranked eighth on my final board that I'm going to be posting next week. So if you can, you know, kind of get a guy like that at the spot that the Bucks are going to be picking, that's a pretty good situation to come into. Now, if he's gone, I think there are still some other guys who are kind of going to fit in a similar range. I think there's potential for a guy like Nikhil Alexander-Walker of Virginia Tech to fall down to that range. I think there's a chance for Matisse Thybulle of Washington to fall down to that range. There are going to be guys who are maybe not sure starter level players, but guys who I think can be really good specialists off the bench in a good rotation or on a good team's rotation that are going to be available at the Bucks spot. And I think if you can add another one of those guys on a cheap contract, that's how you maintain a team that's as good as Milwaukee was this past year.
Absolutely. And this has been, I don't want to sit here and say, you know, Milwaukee's been victimized or anything, but that has been something the Bucks have been pretty good at. I want to say, I mean, there was an entire contingent of DJ Wilson truthers. That's how exciting he was. And in a pretty limited run this last season, got him at 17. Obviously, Malcolm Brogdon in the second round is a huge coup. Sterling Brown, who is someone who I cape for personally, another second round pick who at least showed flashes of being a capable player. Didn't really get much playoff run once the team was healthier, but still, it would be nice to see the Bucks sort of carry on that tradition of finding a guy, you know, later on in the draft. Formerly, it was the second round. Now it's the very end of the first round. So tell me a little bit about Grant Williams. I don't want to get my or Bucks fans' hopes up too much. It almost seems too good to be true that a guy with the potential of, you know, top 10 talent in this draft, top 8 on your final board, falling to Milwaukee, almost seems like, you know, there's got to be some sort of catch there. But What kind of prospect is Williams?
So he's a guy that I think is just going to provide a lot of lineup versatility with whatever team he ends up being drafted by. He is one of the smartest players in the draft, if not the smartest, in terms of his ability to read the floor on offense and make solid, sound decisions on defense and be able to react quickly enough to be able to be a very good team defender. He is probably the second best team defender in the class behind Brandon Clark of Gonzaga. I think that if you're taking Williams, you're betting on him kind of fitting into the Jay Crowder type role, where he's a little bit undersized. He's a 6'5 guy who's probably going to be playing a majority of his minutes as a nominal power forward, but who offers enough skills to be able to complement the guys that are put around him and allow you to play pretty much everybody else on the rest of your roster with him in some combination. I think that he's a really good passer from the elbow and is going to be able to move the ball really well at the next level. I think there's upside that he's going to be able to shoot at least from deep mid-range, free throw line extended, and probably the corners, with the potential that he could extend it out to like an above the break three. And I think that just his ability to defend across the board as a kind of team defender on rotations and switches, I think is going to make him incredibly valuable, especially on a team like the Bucks, where, you know, he kind of has an instant fit with the rest of their kind of switchy wings throughout the roster. I mean, you could potentially play a front court of Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Grant Williams with two other guards and not give up rebounding and not give up shots at the rim very easily. And those are the two things that small ball lineups traditionally struggle with. And I think that he could go a long way to helping to create those kind of optimal situations for potential for Giannis at the five.
I mean, I'm sold. I would now be, I think, thrilled if he were to fall to that 30th pick. I feel like, you know, he is that's a player in Williams. He 3 years did he play? 2 years?
He was a junior, but functionally he's a sophomore. He was one of the youngest players in the junior class this year, and is still going to be 20 when the NBA season starts.
Oh wow, so pretty young too. I know one thing that we had talked briefly about this podcast beforehand. Williams sort of an exception to what I would expect to look for with that pick. Obviously, the good kind of exception. But one thing I mentioned is it seems like the Bucks like to target older players with their later picks. Seems like that's kind of a sort of a way that some smart teams, not just Milwaukee, certainly others have done it too, have sort of almost game the draft is really skilled players who happen to be, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23, even 24 in Malcolm Brogdon's case, sort of falling to them in the 40s just because everyone wants the trendy 19-year-old who you can imagine all these things about. You know, no one thinks that a guy like Sterling Brown is going to end up being a superstar, and teams like to take those swings, it feels like. The Bucks really don't, especially now. I mean, they have really good players. They're looking for guys who can produce. Who are some older players who might be around at 30 who you think could come in and make an impact pretty quickly for Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think this is a great draft for that, because the senior class in this year's draft, kind of the automatically eligible guys, is pretty deep. There are a lot of kind of 22, 23-year-old guys who are going to be among the probable role players out of this class that are pretty significantly developed and kind of ready to contribute right away. I mean, that's the moniker that these upperclassmen guys get, is these are the guys that you're going to be able to plug in and get contributions from next year. And that doesn't always seem to be the case for every senior. Otherwise, it would be a case where we'd be back in the 90s and taking a majority four-year players in the top 10. But I think that there still is some validity to taking those types of guys. I mean, it's, and especially in this year's class, it's kind of the mystery box gag from Family Guy. I mean, you compare a guy like Romeo Langford and you compare a guy like Matisse Thybulle, and, you know, it's kind of a thing where, like, Matisse Thybulle is a really good perimeter defender and is probably going to be a really good rotation player, but Romeo Langford could be anything. He could even be a Matisse Thybulle.
Right.
So I think that there are definitely some guys that the Bucks could consider there. Thybulle, I think, is one option. One of the best perimeter defenders that I think we've ever seen. Played a majority zone, but I mean, even with the zone, his ability to generate steals and blocks in simple help defense situations was potentially the best that we've seen in the last decade at Washington. Cam Johnson of North Carolina is the best shooter off movement in the draft at 6'9". So a really tall player who can be a really solid floor spacer in like a small ball four role. And then I also really like Eric Pascal of Villanova, another senior guy who has kind of the weight to be kind of like a small ball five, but functionally on offense plays like a three. And I think that he, again, could be a guy where he's providing a lot of lineup versatility to this team in a way that, you know, they need to be able to kind of match up with every other team in the East and eventually match up with whoever is going to be end up coming out of the West next year.
Definitely. Versatility always a plus in basically every situation in the NBA these days, it feels like. I wanted to ask you about a couple of guys who I know of for really no other reason than just name recognition. For whatever reason, their names have been out there. So I'm going to lob three guys at you right now. I know you got the new big board cooking right now. I have one from May. Here, May 6th, I believe, that I think is the most recent as of this point.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Okay. Three guys that I've heard of either through doing my GM on 2K or stories written about them, whatever it may be. Naz Reid, I'm going to mess up this pronunciation. I said last episode I was going to mess up pronunciations in this one. Rui Hachimura.
Nailed it.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's go. I know people aren't that excited about him, but at least I got the name right. And Darius Bazley, who I just know because of that really cool thing Mark Stein wrote about him and Clutch Sports. And it's hilarious that on the big board, it's like above him is Jordan Poole from Michigan. Below him is DeMarcus Simmons from Georgia State. And then Darius Bazley, small forward, New Balance. Pretty funny. Anyone who doesn't know, Rich Paul had Darius Bazley take a guaranteed $1 million internship at New Balance as his draft year thing, I guess. I've heard of players going overseas. I think I've heard of players who just train themselves, although I think that's rarer. Obviously, a lot of guys go to college. Intern at New Balance is a new one for me, but those three guys, maybe people might know about a little more, some of the less hardcore draft nicks in Bucks Twitter. Are any of them good fits, good prospects, or are they kind of just the guys who ended up getting some acclaim before the draft?
Yeah, as your boy Eric Bledsoe now knows, Rich Paul gets you paid. It just doesn't necessarily come in the most optimal way sometimes.
A bag is a bag, I guess.
Yeah. So I think that all three of these guys are kind of emblematic of the way that, like, the guys that I have ranked in the second round kind of are. I've been working on my final big board right now, and as I go through the second round, I'm just – it's guy after guy after guy where it's like you can see small slivers of ways that they can contribute, but also just these giant red flags that probably mean that they're going to be nothing more than like an end of the bench guy in the league. Hachimura is a great example of this, a guy who potentially could go in the lottery in this draft. And that is absolutely insane to me, because he is probably the worst defensive prospect in the draft class. I would probably say that even like Carson Edwards of Purdue and Ja Morant and Darius Garland, all the point guards are better defensive prospects than Rui is because of how little he understands the world around him on the defensive end. And I think that he also kind of has a little bit of an antiquated skill set. If, I mean, 10 years ago, he probably is a much more palatable option at the four. But I mean, in the current NBA, you need to be able to shoot at the four. You need to be able to provide some kind of spacing threat or some kind of handling threat to be able to survive against these modern defenses. And he really, I don't think, does either of those at the NBA level. Reed then is a guy who I think is super skilled. I think that he has some hints at some real NBA skill talent, especially in terms of his ability to put the ball on the deck from the elbow and be able to shoot off the dribble. But also he is probably the worst athlete in the class. And I think he really has a severe limitation in kind of how stiff he is moving on the court to kind of actually be able to realize that skill set. And then Bazley, you know, I think that he's a guy that could have kind of a very functional modern skill set in terms of his ability to shoot from three and be able to attack in transition and potentially switch at the NBA level. But he's just so thin that I really wonder if his body's going to be able to hold up to him playing the three or the four, especially because he probably doesn't have the quickness to be like, or to be played as a two or as like a full-time small ball three. So really that's kind of the thing I keep coming back to. There is a drop off at some point in this draft where it goes from players who I think are kind of specialists kind of later on, the guys like Nickeil Alexander-Walker, like Cam Johnson, like Matisse Thybulle, who could provide value in a specific rotation spot, to guys who it's just going to be such a long road to them even being like the end of a rotation in the NBA.
It's interesting. It's nice to, for Milwaukee to be in a position that, you know, they can afford to say, we'll just add a specialist. We don't need to take such a risky, it seems, swing on one of those guys or one of the other guys late who maybe ends up being awesome, but, you know, probably less so. I've got more questions I want to ask you, more things I need you to tell me. But first, Trevor, I need to tell you some things about some of our partners here at Blue Wire. Everyone's favorite part of the podcast, my ad reads. I just think, Trevor, that when you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. I'm sure you know all about this. And that's why you need ShipStation.com, because it's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. It's like what Draft Express used to be, RIP. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. And right now, Eurostep listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment, so you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. All you have to do is visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE, B-L-U-E, ShipStation.com, enter promo code BLUE. All you got to do is make ship happen. Also, got to give a shout out to Harry's, Harry's Razors. We want our listeners to be shaving comfortably here at the Eurostep. So you guys and girls, I guess, can go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set. This value trial set, what a good value. It includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, no pore shave gel here, and a travel blade cover. You get all of it for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors, it's totally worth trying Harry's. That's because Harry's fix shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. That's why they bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for more than 95 years. That's almost a century. You too can join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim that trial offer for $3 by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee, just like this podcast. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. We too, here at the Eurostep, will refund you 100% of the cost of admission to this podcast if you don't like it. That's a guarantee. That's got my name on it. Okay, Trevor, I have another draft question for you.
Let's go.
One position, well, I'll just combine them. Two positions that I think the Bucks could really use for back, hopefully backups at both, depending on what happens with Brook Lopez, is Milwaukee could use a true backup five. I think Nico Mirotic was brought in to, you know, just to provide shooting in general, but I think also sort of to do that. He was awful. He couldn't rim protect the way he needed to. And really, the Bucks don't have a clean backup point guard if George Hill leaves. And I think that could be a problem. I mean, obviously the Bucks aren't going to keep him for $19 million. Can release him for that small guarantee. Try to re-sign him. Nothing's certain. But backup ones, backup fives. Is there any players that slot cleanly into those designations that could be available at 30 overall?
Yep, I've got three players for you here. Two point guards and then one center. The two point guards, I think the best options for the Bucks are Carson Edwards of Purdue and Shamori Ponds of St. John's. I think that those are kind of the two guys after the guys who are going to go in the top 10 that are the next two point guards on the board for me. For Ponds, I think that he's just a really good playmaker, makes a lot of sound decisions, and I think could be really, really effective in a role like being a backup one in Milwaukee, where his playmaking is suddenly so much more effective with the spacing that the team has, and then also the vertical spacing that's provided by having, you know, Giannis in the middle able to dunk everything that he throws up. I think that this is an ideal fit for him. I think that he could slot in as kind of like a Monty Morris type, where you're asking him to maybe play 15 minutes a game, but really command the offense when Bledsoe's sitting and they really need to go to those lineups that don't have as many ball handlers. Edwards, I think, could accomplish the same goal, but he does it by being a playmaker. He does it with shooting gravity, just adding another shooter that is able to pull up from 30 feet, has probably the best range of any of the point guards in the draft. And I think really interestingly is a, much like George Hill, is a great screener as well. Mm. I think that you could get some really interesting sets with Edwards and Giannis, where you're maybe kind of generating switches the way that the 2016 Cavs did in the finals, just constantly putting your point guard and your four, who's a really good ball handler, in pick and rolls with each other, and trying to generate that switch of Giannis onto the opposing one is something that I think could provide him with a lot of potentially even playoff value as soon as next year. So I think that that would be really a really good fit. In terms of fives, I think there's one clear answer for the Bucks, and that's Daniel Gafford of Arkansas. He's a guy who really was on autopilot for most of the year. Honestly, he came back to school, and by the middle of December, it was very clear that he had made a mistake, and he knew that he had made a mistake, and he just kind of gave up and spent three quarters of the year looking like Anthony Davis for the second half of the season in terms of his on-court demeanor. But at the end of the day, he is absurdly long, 6'11 with a 7'2" wingspan, has a 36-inch vertical on top of that, so he can jump to the rim and, or jump to the roof of the building and going towards the rim. I think that he is, at his baseline, a very competent pick-and-roll dive man and potential rim protector on the back end. And if you're having him do that for 15 to 18 minutes a game behind Brook Lopez, or even potentially with Brook Lopez on the floor in some stretches if he's back, I think that that's perfect. I mean, he's the perfect type of guy where you can get, just kind of plug him in and run a ton of pick and rolls and just have him in the center, able to catch everything and spring your guards off to be able to get towards the rim. His vertical gravity is great. And I think that he does have some defensive value as well. So I don't think that you can do much better in terms of centers than Gafford. Even in most drafts, I think that he's the type of guy where if you're drafting a center late, he's who you want. And, you know, a couple good point guard options there as well. I mean, the Bucks are kind of the one team in the league that actually does need both of those positions, and neither of them are very strong in this draft. So I think that it's kind of a perfect match of they're going to be right in the perfect spot to pick. They should have all three of these guys on the board for them.
That sounds fun. I like that. I like that idea. If Grant Williams wants to be there too, that's fine. There's one prospect that I've caped for. I'll admit this. It's because I ended up with him in a 2K simulation. He developed into someone really good. That's the only reason. This is not concrete proof, folks. I tried to be a draft guy one year. I thought Jaylen Brown was going to stink. I gave up. It takes so much research and dedication that folks like Trevor do, and it's just I've just stopped trying to have intelligent takes that are my own if I'm not going to put in the time. Anyway, that's enough about my failures as a draft analyst. Admiral Schofield, who I see people write a lot of good things about. It's like do you watch Silicon Valley?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, there's this phrase one of the characters makes up, Rigby. It's like Richard is great, but, and they just keep saying Rigby before they like trash him. Like, I see people say these like good things about Admiral Schofield. You know, he's big, he can shoot, this and that. And there's always the but. There's always that one reason people are low on him. What's up with Admiral Schofield? And he's got such a cool name.
Yeah, and he's also like the avatar for my podcast. I mean, he's the definition of a thick, jacked frame. But I think that the big thing with Schofield is that he is too small. He is too short to play optimally for what his skill set is. I mean, he is a small ball four who is like 6'3.5" without shoes on. Like, he, I think, is going to be best served as like a screener. That's how Tennessee used him a lot, as like a screener who would flare to the 3-point line and then kind of flare out above the or towards the corner and then attack off of slashes and cuts off of like secondary actions. And that's kind of what I think he would be best at, as like a small ball four. I don't think that he has the ball handling skills to be a wing full time. I don't think that he has a comfortable enough jumper to actually be like a full-time 3-and-D wing. And he gets lost a lot defending on the perimeter. He's better when he can kind of dig down and kind of almost play a little bit like Marcus Smart, where he's the guy that you want blowing up attempts to generate switches on defense, and because he's so strong and so kind of set in the post and at the rim, he's very hard to dislodge on drives. And he's kind of the guy that you want defending at the point of attack in a switching scheme. And I don't think that he would do very well in Milwaukee's defensive coverage because of how much stress it puts on your off-ball wings to be able to make really good decisions and rotations. That's not something that he's great at doing. So I don't think that he's a perfect fit for Milwaukee. I think that he definitely has his spots in the league that could make a lot of sense. But I think that 130 is way too early for him when you consider the other guys on the board. And two, I think that there are better options for kind of where he could land that could make the most of his skill set.
That makes sense. That's totally fair. I didn't realize he was quite that short. I think the defensive things you pointed out are interesting. And certainly the some of the other prospects you identified seem like much better fits. It is unfortunate that it does feel to me as well, and I mean, you would know much better, but I feel like most drafts are, you know, they're either full or not full of the three main groups, point guards, wings, and bigs. Like, There was a point guard draft, like, what, 2 years ago when you had Frankie Smokes and Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonzo and De'Aaron Fox and even more guys. This feels like it's mostly wings, less the other two things, which maybe speaks to, you know, sort of the positions of strength in the league. Maybe it's just a coincidence. But, yeah, Milwaukee not exactly dying for wings, depending on what happens. But you can never really have too many, so it wouldn't be the worst thing if a nice one fell to the Bucks. I know personally, and I don't know if this is really a question per se, so much as I would really like it if the Bucks could pick up another player who would not just be a good shooter, but like a very capable shooter. The Bucks, a lot of people look at it as like a really good shooting team just because of how many they jack up, but the only regular rotation player who shot above 40% was Malcolm Brogdon, and I just feel like offensively they could be a lot more effective with another guy who could reach or exceed that 40% mark. You know, does it feel like there's any, and this is so hard to predict, this is a weird question, but any players in that 30 range who could come in and shoot lights out right away?
Yeah, I think there's definitely options. It's just a matter of kind of how versatile that player can be, whether you're getting kind of like a Steve Novak type who is an elite shooter from the corners and stationary, but you try to get him off movement and he can't create separation. Or if you're getting a guy like some of the more advanced modern shooters, you look at like JJ Redick, you look at even down to like guys like Luke Kennard, guys who are able to kind of spring themselves and create space. I think that's what makes Cam Johnson such an attractive fit to so many teams at the end of the end of the first round, is he is that type of guy who can just create that separation and also has the height to be able to just shoot over the top. He is the one guy that I think is kind of that perfect, like, probably going to come in next year and shoot close to 40% from three and be able to kind of consistently float around that spot as he has throughout his entire collegiate career. I think that the Bucks would be a really good fit for his skill set because they already have a player who kind of fills the same role that he does, but that he's probably going to end up significantly better than, and that's Tony Snell. If you can find, he's a very easy kind of natural fit into Tony Snell's role to be better than him. And I think that, you know, if you want another option, because I expect Johnson to be gone by the time that Milwaukee's on the board at this point, I think that he'll probably go in the early 20s. I like Dylan Windler of Belmont, another guy who's 6'8", is a good off-movement shooter, not as good as Johnson, but, you know, shows some potential coming off screens and particularly as like a trailing three-point shooter above the break, similar to how Nikola Mirotic does that really well in transition. So I think that he could be a really good fit there as well. He doesn't necessarily, I think, have the same ability to translate directly to the NBA just because his body is a little bit thinner, and I have questions about kind of what he does outside of shooting, whereas I think Cam Johnson's at least like a capable defender. I don't know that Windler is, but I think if you're just looking purely at shooters, like, those are the two guys that you're looking for, along with Carson Edwards, who we talked about earlier, if you're looking to get that shooting from the point guard spot.
Sure. I think I'm much more intrigued by Johnson. I was looking at Windler a little bit, and, you know, for a second it kind of jumped out at me. I believe he averaged double-digit boards this year, and I was like, oh, that's good. I mean, guy who can crash the boards and shoot. And then I kind of had to stop myself and go, he played at Belmont, he's 6'8". I don't know if that means he's actually a good rebounder, or he might – I didn't watch Belmont. He's probably just one of the taller guys on the team and kind of just got those boards. Yeah. College stats can be deceiving, I firmly believe.
Yeah, he plays bigger than his size, and he did pretty well in kind of the post college season draft camps, like the combine 5-on-5. He did pretty well as a rebounder there. But yeah, when you get him in against NBA athletes, it's a real question of how much that's going to translate. Very similar to John Morant's finishing numbers. I don't know that that's going to translate as well as people think. Mm-hmm. I think that Windler is going to have a similar issue.
Had to get a Ja Morant shot in here, didn't you?
Yeah, you got me a chance to dig on Ja. You got me a chance to dig on
Rui.
We just got to hit Tyler Herro here real quick, and we'll hit my trinity of guys that I do not like in this class.
I mean, let's do it. Wisconsin native, notably vilified in the state for forsaking the bad Badgers. Tyler Herro, go in on why Bucks fans should not be excited if the team ends up with him.
two very simple things. He has a negative wingspan by at least 2 inches,
oh,
which is pretty bad when you're only 6'5". You know, when you're 6'9", like, or 6'10", like Kelly Olynyk, that doesn't necessarily matter as much. But when you're as small as Herreau, that's a really negative thing, especially for a shooter, because it means that you're not going to be able to shoot over the top of guys who are even similar size to you. Also, 53% finisher in the half court on offense, and a lot of those came in kind of the deli range, away from the restricted area, kind of just in the middle of the paint, just kind of wild floaters being thrown up. And I think that's a little bit problematic if you're looking to him to be anything more than a spot up shooter. And he's not even really that great of a spot up shooter. He's billed as like this elite shooting prospect, but he doesn't show the ability to be able to shoot consistently off screens or off movement around the perimeter. And I think that that's all really kind of pointing to, well, what does he do exactly then? The fact that he's being mocked in the middle of the first round is absolutely insane to me. And almost more insane than Rui going in the lottery. I don't even have Herreau in my top 60 at this point. And he's probably going to go like 17th. So that's great. That's kind of why what we talked about earlier is happening. There are teams that are valuing these guys who just do not make sense projecting to the NBA. And they're going to push guys like Brandon Clark and Grant Williams into a range where the Bucks can consider them. And that's wild.
It is, and it sounds like it'll work out for Milwaukee as long as they don't get suckered into one of these guys. Herreau, if he's 6'5" with like a 6'3" wingspan, he's just gonna get abused defensively by any time there's a switch. I mean, anybody would be able to post him up, it seems like. So yeah. I will join you in being low on him. Certainly at 30, if somehow the Bucks ended up with a second round pick, even then it sounds like there'd be a lot of better options. One last question here, and then I will let you go. Not before we get to plug all your stuff, of course, but this is something I think Kane and I are going to cover a little bit more in depth, especially identifying some targets in our next episode. But sort of, obviously, you know, a lot of great options as outlined here to use that pick on. Milwaukee could also trade that pick after the draft. You know, the Stepien rule no longer applies. Bucks could find out who some other team wanted, take that guy, and then, you know, trade the pick however many days later. So, Trevor, with this draft, you already identified weird players are valued strangely. You know, is there a chance that could make somewhat of a market for this 30th pick if some team is absolutely in love with someone who falls because of the sort of flukiness that feels like really just after Zion in general?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think that you can kind of point to the 2013 draft as a marker of kind of where this draft could go. That draft featured a lot of movement late in the draft. You saw the Rudy Gobert, Andre Roberson trade where we got, I can't remember exactly what that famous Woj tweet is. That he had after that trade. Oh, the one where he just stopped midway through announcing the deal and just said, whatever.
That's great.
Coach moment. That's kind of where I think this draft could end up going. I think that the Bucks definitely are going to have a little market at the 30th pick, and you know, could maybe leverage things into, if the right player's available for the right team, they could leverage that into maybe like a very heavily protected future first or like a unprotected second from a team who's in the high 30s, where you know that actually has a chance to convey into like a meaningful pick in coming years, like in the 30 to 35 range, kind of setting you up to maybe make that next Malcolm Brogdon selection. I think that there's definitely potential that they could end up using this to gather maybe a couple more assets that could extend, you know, the flexibility that they have going into what's going to be a couple pivotal summers here in a row for them, trying to maintain the team around Giannis before they have to maintain Giannis. So I think that definitely should be on the mind of Bucks fans, and they should be looking at teams like Atlanta, teams like Philadelphia, who have those multiple second round picks. or teams that are kind of in that early range who could maybe swap out a second this year and a second next year to be able to get the guy that they want at that 30 spot.
Definitely. And always good to have options. And one further thing just on that possibility, particularly with the second rounders, you do get additional cap flexibility when you take a second rounder as opposed to a first rounder. More non-guaranteed years, which is even easier than getting the team options because you have to take those basically a year in advance. So that helps, and lower just salaries too, which all of that stuff starts to matter a whole lot more when you're a team that could potentially run into luxury tax this year like the Bucks. So another reason that could be an option on the board, so to speak. I think that's all I've got for now, Trevor. I really want to thank you for your time. And as mentioned earlier, this is the moment right here. Let the folks know where they can find you, where your stuff is coming, so to speak, and what you've got going on. I mean, obviously the big board, as you already mentioned, but what else is cooking?
Yeah, so I've got the big board probably coming out on Monday at the Step Back. If you're probably listening to this after Thursday morning, I will have a second round steals post up on the Step Back as well. So that could highlight some potential targets for the Bucks to just take it 30, one pick ahead of the second round. It'll cover some of the guys that we covered tonight. And then probably going to have kind of my final big board reveal podcast for Thick Jack Frame sometime next week, which while it is a Cleveland Cavaliers center podcast and that may scare away some of your Bucks fan listeners, I try to make it just kind of a neutral draft podcast that can be listened to by fans of any team. So while I will probably talk about kind of where guys could slot in for the Cavs, I think that it could potentially give you some good information, at least on kind of my scouting process and explaining kind of why I rank some guys that we talked about tonight, where I rank them. So that should be something coming this week as well. And then hopefully on draft night, I'll find something to do. Try to be on somewhere, either a video thing or figure out something to do there. But we'll go from there.
Sounds good. And just one further incentive for anyone considering listening to Thick Jack Frames, the Cavaliers focus, which may make you go, oh, well, who cares? Obviously no one available at 5 will drop to 30. No one will go that far drastically, probably, but something to remember, Cleveland also has, I believe, the 26th pick this year, too.
Yep.
So a lot of players scouted around that same end of the first round range of interest to Bucks fans. So definitely go check out that podcast, subscribe, rate, review, all those good things. And folks, while you're in the subscribing, rating, and reviewing mode, do that to this podcast, the Eurostep, as well. You know, keep on listening. We're going to keep bringing you all the on-point Bucks coverage we possibly can, everything that's timely. Probably some things that aren't timely, but mostly timely. Kane and I will be back sometime next week to do some more Bucks talk, a little bit of draft, some more free agency stuff. As always, we really appreciate you listening. So thank you, Trevor, and thank you to all of the listeners. Please tune in next time.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.